And welcome back to this encore edition of Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Now, a conversation I had last spring with the best-selling writer Amor Towles. He grew up in the Boston area, and after graduating from Yale with a degree in literature and from Stanford with a master's degree in English, he was an investment professional for more than 20 years. He never stopped writing, however, and for the last 15 years or so, he's been writing full-time. And he has been very successful at it. All of his books have been bestsellers. He's the author of 3 novels, including A Gentleman in Moscow, which was adapted for a television series on Paramount Plus starring Ewan McGregor. His novel, The Lincoln Highway, began its life on the New York Times bestseller list at number 1. It's being adapted as a movie. Amor Towles' latest book is a brilliant compilation of 6 short stories set in New York and a novella set in the golden age of Hollywood that features a character from his novel Rules of Civility. The collection is called Table for Two. Amor Towles joined us on Zoom from New York. Amor, it's wonderful to meet you, and thank you so much for your time and for this fantastic book.
Tom, thanks very much. It's great to be here. Appreciate the nice remarks about the book, too.
Well, it's really terrific, and I'll pay you the highest compliment I could pay you, which is that I read this book because I wanted to, not because I had to. I read this book before I even knew I was going to have an opportunity to interview you about it. I just did it for fun. I read Gentleman in Moscow, and I'll also, full disclosure, those are the only 2 I've read, this collection and Gentleman in Moscow. And they're just terrific. How do you make a decision that when you come up with an idea for a story, that it's a short story or a novella, which is in this case a couple hundred pages, or a full novel like Gentleman in Moscow? How do you tell?
So I've been writing since I was a kid. I'm writing fiction since I was a kid. It's what I've wanted to do since I was in first grade, basically. So over my life, I've had many, many, many ideas for stories. And when an idea occurs to me, it usually is in a very simple, a little conceit, as it were, a little notion. And usually I can tell a lot about that idea very quickly. So, you know, in the case of A Gentleman in Moscow, the idea was, oh, a guy gets trapped in a hotel for a long period of time. Yeah, that's interesting. That could be something. And then very quickly, I was like, oh, yeah, this could be set in Russia. He could be an aristocrat in a fancy hotel across the street from the Kremlin. He could go from the revolution all the way to the Cold War. All that was really in a matter of minutes. And with short stories, it's similar. And that I have a notion, and I know a lot about it very quickly. And one of those things I know is about its scale. When I have the idea, like for A Gentleman in Moscow, one of the first things I can feel about it is that, oh, this can go in many different directions. This could involve a whole group of people. It can pass through time. It can different events, changes in the life of the protagonist. Can sweep in history. So there's sort of a sense of its magnitude right from the start. Whereas in the case of the Table for Two, one of the stories, the New York stories called The Bootlegger, is the most the first 5 pages of that story are the most autobiographical pages I've written in my life. And it's when I was 30, and my wife and I, the kids were sleeping through the night. I was in my early 30s. We decided to go on a date to Carnegie Hall and see some classical music, which wasn't our normal bag. And sat down, old guy in a trench coat sits next to me, and he's got something sticking out of his sleeve. And I realize, oh my God, the guy's recording the concert. I couldn't believe it. He's recording a concert in Carnegie Hall of all places. And I just got all wrapped up in it. I could barely pay attention to the music because I was like, I'm going to turn this guy in. You know, bootlegging is not a victimless crime. You know, someone needs to defend the rights of artists. You know, so anyway, all this crazy thinking. And 25 years later, between Gentleman in Moscow and The Lincoln Highway, I was writing some shorter fiction, sort of just to sort of transition, as it were, before taking the big lift of the next novel. And I thought about that night. I was like, oh, you know, that's sort of an interesting night. It'd be fun to go back and return to that. So sort of imagine a young man in that situation, but where he actually turns the old guy in. And let's see what happens. Now, as soon as I sort of had that notion again, there's a sense of scale. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, this would be a beautiful tale about a little interaction between these 2 strangers over a matter of days, And we don't need to know everything about their past or all the people they know and the political sphere. And it felt very intimate. So long answer to your question, Tom. But yes, usually I can tell right from the beginning what the scope of the idea is. And that sort of sets the tone around whether it's, you know, a short novella or novel.
Well, it's really interesting that you bring up The Bootlegger. I know you're not supposed to pick favorites, but I do. And The Bootlegger is my favorite story in this collection. Now, I loved all of them. I really did. They're very different. This, you know, couple goes to Carnegie Hall, and it's amazing to hear you say that, you know, this was kind of you and your wife some years ago. You were, in fact, because the person in this story, his name is Tommy, is an investment banker. You, in fact, did that for quite a number of years before you started writing full time. That's amazing to hear. It's also amazing to hear that the person sitting next to you really was recording the concerts. That is illegal. I mean, it's not a good thing to do as a former musician. I can you know, stand up for your contention that copyright violations are not victimless crimes. But this notion of truth in fiction, this notion of saying things as they actually happened. I think it was Nabokov or somebody who said to call a story true is an insult to both truth and fiction. And you've also made the comment that these New York stories, because the six stories are sort of based roughly around New York, and then there's this novella which takes place in L.A. You say that's the first time you're writing about things that you had sort of witnessed firsthand.
Yes,
and that's a different perspective, isn't it?
It is, because most of my, not only my novels, but a lot of the fiction I wrote as a young person in my teens and my 20s, a lot of my fiction is about moments in time or places or people of which I have no direct experience, right? You know, so I am not, I don't have come from Russian heritage. I don't speak the Russian language. I did not major in Russian history in college. And I had not spent more than 2 weeks in Russia when I wrote the first draft of A Gentleman in Moscow. And I like that. I like displacing myself into an arena that I have not had direct involvement with. So it was kind of fun in the case of these stories. As you say, five of the six New York stories really take place around the year 2000. And that was certainly a time when I was in the city. And so it was a chance to kind of revisit the city. They're not all as the starting point of Bootlegger's autobiographical. The others are not autobiographical, but they do spring from something I might have witnessed or you know, an idea. And, you know, the Hasta Luego opens at a snowstorm in LaGuardia, and, you know, everybody's planes are being canceled. And in the, you know, the line to get your, you know, yourself rescheduled for the next day, the young New York professional finds himself next to another man who doesn't seem bothered at all by the snowstorm, and he's sort of fascinated by this and sort of attracted to the guy in a way, and they end up sharing a cab into the city when the airline puts them up in a hotel, and things begin there. Now, you know, that has never happened to me, but boy, I've been in that snowstorm in LaGuardia many times, you know.
Yeah.
And that's when it starts sets your wheels thinking. You're sitting there and you're like looking at the stranger next to you or across from you or the person you get in a brief conversation with, and you sort of start to imagine the life behind them and the possibility that your life could kind of crash into theirs by reaching out, you know, in that moment. So yes, it's sort of fun to kind of take my New York life, as it were, and to revisit it with the eyes of a fabulist. And as you say, in the Nabokovian principle, not to represent a true New York, but you know, to one up it as a way, in a way, to, you know, because the New York of the imagination, in a way, is its own city.
Yeah, the first story begins in Tsarist Russia in 1918. Obviously, I have no direct experience with that, but I wonder if, in a weird kind of way, it's limiting, you know, it's confining if you know what that snowstorm at LaGuardia is like, and you have to, you know, overcome that barrier to say, oh, wait a minute, that couldn't happen because it didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think that's absolutely true, and I think in a way more from a more insidious standpoint for the artist, is that the artist might start including things in the tale because they were there, you know, and because they saw them. That's the way it happened, you know, and some of that stuff doesn't belong there. You know? And so part of the reason I do often like to write about things that I haven't experienced is it makes me a different kind of observer. You know, it's like a detective walking to a crime scene. You've never been in the house before, you know something's happened there. And you're going to look at the placement of every object and the arrangement of the furniture, the photographs on the shelf with a very different eye than, you know, someone who's used to going into that room every day. And in a way, that's what I try to bring to my, the observations I make as a writer.
Amor Towles, his latest book is called Table for Two. It's now out in paperback, and we will be right back to talk more about it after a quick break. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us on this archive edition of Midday, we're listening to a conversation I had with the acclaimed author Amor Towles. He's the author of four books, all of which have been New York Times bestsellers that have collectively sold more than 8 million copies and have been translated into more than 40 languages. His latest book is a collection of short fiction and a novella called Table for Two. We spoke in May when it had just been released in paperback. Here's more of my conversation with Amor Towles. So let's talk a little bit about this novella that takes up the second half of the book. It takes place in the late 1930s in Hollywood, the Golden Age. I saw maybe on a press release or a website or something, you said that this was a character that you're revisiting. This comes from The Rules of Civility, character named Evelyn Ross. And you actually went to Beverly Hills. You live in Manhattan, but you decided to go to Beverly Hills and camp out in the Beverly Hills Hotel to write this novella. Tell us what's behind that decision.
Well, so, I mean, you're absolutely right. Eve is a character from Rules of Civility, and about in that book, which is set in New York in 1938, so a year in the life of a young woman named Katie. Eve is Katie's roommate and her closest friend, but over the course of that year, Eve is in a car accident where she's disfigured. She has a romance that falls apart. She's not very interested in her career. So she decides to leave town and put New York behind her. She goes back. Her intention is to take a train back home to the Midwest. And as the train is sort of arriving in Chicago, she decides, I'm not going to get off the train. I'm not going to go home to my family with my tail between my legs, as it were. So she extends her ticket to Los Angeles. And we know this in the course of Rules of Civility. And I just, after that book, kept wondering, I was really fascinated with what is Eve going to do when she gets to Hollywood? Because she's a real troublemaker. She's very independent-minded. She hates it when someone thinks they know what she will do. She'll do the opposite of that just to teach them a lesson, no matter what, whether it's good for her or not. And she's one of these great sort of force of nature, in a way, and a beautiful young woman, but who's got a scar and a limp. And so I began to imagine her arrival in Los Angeles, and I had written a sort of a shorter version of what that might be. And I really decided for this collection, the story deserved to be much bigger. And so, yes, I flew out to Los Angeles and I moved into the Beverly Hills Hotel, which is what Eve does when she gets there, because that's the kind of sacrifice I'm willing to make, for my for my readers.
On behalf of a grateful nation. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yes, exactly. On behalf of a grateful nation. So, it's great funny because it's a crazy thing in one of these ways, right? These old hotels that it was there almost 100 years ago. At the center of Beverly Hills, serving the machine that is Hollywood, supporting the glamour of it. And so, you go there now and you get a glimpse of that. But it is fun to go back in time and try to imagine it in this moment in the late 30s where Hollywood was, at its peak in terms of not only the quality of its work and the power of the stardom, but where the studio system was at its peak in terms of power, because this is back when the studio chiefs were writing contracts for actors and actresses that really controlled their lives in a way that was ultimately deemed illegal. But at that moment in the late 30s, it was still very much, the studio chief's town.
Interesting. Elizabeth Strout is a great friend of this show. She's been on many times. We've talked about lots of her books. And her last book crams together like 12 characters from her last, eight books. I mean, it's really a lot of fun. But revisiting or extending the life of this character with who is intertwined with real historical figures. I mean, Olivia de Havilland is a major player in this story. It takes place around the filming of Gone with the Wind. I mean, stuff that actually did happen in real life. Was that a fun challenge to mix the fictional with the real historical?
It is a lot of fun, it's almost like you're operating in, there's two universes side by side, and there's a door in between them, and your fiction is the door, and it is fun both from a tribute standpoint. These are people that are interesting or who I admire. I loved the films of the 30s as a youth. Another aspect of that story is that it is a noirish tale, and I think of noir or the hard-boiled detective novel like Jazz is an invention that could only have been made in America. You needed the variety, the cultural variety of America to create Jazz. You needed that sort of the American sort of culture to create the hard-boiled detective novel. But both of those two things were immediately appreciated around the world, adopted and copied around the world in film and in books. And so as a lover of the American narrative history, it's really, I knew that going back, not only was I going to dip into Hollywood and bring Olivia de Havilland to life through in my own terms, but in the terms of my story, but it was also going to be a chance to take my approach to a noirish, hard-boiled detective environment. And because where else, where could be better than Hollywood in the 30s for that?
Yeah, and it's very successful. I mean, it's a great tale, and it's beautifully told. I'm also really impressed and just so enjoy the capacity you have for the right tone of each one of these stories. The Russian story that we talked about kind of reads like someone telling a Russian fairy tale. The Bootlegger, when the woman and her husband go to Carnegie Hall, is told from the perspective of the woman most of the time. You get her just right. And there are, I don't know, six or seven different people narrating the story about Eve and Olivia de Havilland and what's going on in New York, and putting yourself into those people and making yourself sound like those people. Is that sort of the central trick of being a novelist? I mean, and do you approach it like an actor saying, here's a person I'm going to play this part, or is it a different experience?
It's an excellent question, Tom. I've already sort of mentioned earlier that if I have an idea for a story, I often know a lot about it very quickly, where it's going to take place, when it's going to take place, what's going to happen, who the characters are, the main characters. And I mean, really, that's the kind of thing that I might have a strong sense of within the first, 30 minutes after having an idea. The hard decision, in a way, the most interesting decision is not any of that. It's who's going to tell the tale.
Yeah.
And you have so many options as a storyteller. We can start with the omniscient narrator, so the Henry Jamesian or Tolstoyan narrator who knows all. They know what happened in the past, the future. They know the inner lives of the characters, and they're going to lay it down for you with sort of, a great sort of comprehensive knowledge, omniscience. But you start moving away from that. And there's all kinds of variations between that and where you get to first person, where it's just me telling you what happened to me. And in between are all kinds of variations. And so when you come up with an idea, one of the challenges really is to start asking yourself, wait, who should tell this tale? Is it going to be that omniscient voice? Is the main character going to tell you what happened to them? Or is it going to be someone to the side? Like in The Bootlegger, where the young man who sits next to the bootlegger and ultimately decides to turn the guy in to the house, you could tell that story from the old man's perspective or from the young man's, but in the end, it really, having tried different things in my head, I realized it really should be the wife who tells the story. She's the one. And then you start to listen to her, you know, going back to your question, as you get to hear, oh yeah, she should tell the story because she's going to love him, but she also going to know his faults. And so she's going to sort of take in from this perspective, she'll be able to analyze for the reader in sort of a funny but a piercing way exactly what's happening psychologically, you know, at this thing that she's witnessing because she knows her husband so well. But she's also attached to him, you know. And so making that decision can affect everything in the story. It affects the tone of it, the vocabulary of it, the way that poetics are used is going to be tied to the personality of that narrator, and ultimately the thematic direction is going to shift a little bit because it's coming from her angle. And so, as I say, it's the most interesting, most challenging decision. It is a lot like, I think, method acting.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, is that you do have to get to know the person, where they've come from, what their personality's like, so that you get to the point where you can imagine what they might say in any circumstance. So that as the events of the story unfold, that inner personality of that person is what's driving the way the story is described, as opposed to, you know, a pure manipulation of from me.
Is writing hard? Thomas Mann once said that a writer is someone for whom writing is very difficult. And I just wonder, does it come easily to you? Is it a facile endeavor, or is it, are you sweating?
I think it is hard. Starting with the fact that for me, when I have an idea for a novel, I will generally design that novel over a period of, say, 3 years. Now, I might be writing a different novel at that time. While I'm writing A Gentleman in Moscow, I'm designing The Lincoln Highway. I'm filling notebooks with what happens and what are the settings and who are the people and their backgrounds. And when I finally have sort of a full sense of over multiple notebooks of what happens in that tale, I then outline it and begin to write it. But then that's going to take me 2 years from there. And during that time, I don't share my work. So you're talking about a multi-year investment of personal energy, and in which there's a lot of labor, you know, really, because, you know, writing the initial draft, it can be fun and fast, but making that chapter as tight and as effective and rewarding as it can be takes a lot of drudgery, actually, where you're reading every sentence over and over and over. So there is work to bring that, and there is a certain amount of stamina involved. There's a certain amount of discipline involved. Would I do a different job today? No. You know, do I feel very lucky that I'm in a position to do this job? Absolutely. You know, so I do think that there are many aspects to the writing of a novel, of writing. You have coming up with the idea, you have doing the first draft. There's the revisions where you're restructuring the work as you go and trying to figure out what's the optimal. There's the fine editing. And I think to write a book well, you really have to fall in love with each phase of that process. You can't just love the idea part and not enjoy the editing part. It's not going to work. You do need to love it all.
As a reader, it's quite evident that you loved it all because you did a really beautiful job. I was just delighted to read it. The endeavor of reading your work is just a joyful and insightful thing to do. So many thanks for the book and for your time today. It's great to talk to you.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be you. I look forward to coming back.
Okay, hope so. Amor Towles. His latest book is called Table for Two. We spoke about it last spring. That'll do it for us today on this encore edition of Midday. I hope you'll subscribe to the Midday podcast and that you'll check out Midday and all the shows you like on WYPR on the WYPR app. If you have an idea for a show that you'd like to have us consider, drop us an email. The address is midday@wypr.org. I'm Tom Hall. On behalf of the Midday team, thanks for listening on the radio or online. We appreciate you. Have a great day.